The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Okay, guys, so we're going to get started. It's 10:05, and I know we're supposed to start at 10, but things at WCL sometimes don't always start on time, so that's okay. Good morning to everybody. For those of you who don't know me, and I know a lot of the faces in the room, my name is Myra Wilder. I'm the Assistant Director in the Office of Student Affairs. I've spoken to many of you either over the phone or we've had multiple email exchanges, and some of you I've worked with quite frequently in person. But I first commend all of you for coming out on a post-snowy Saturday morning, at least it's not 17 degrees outside, to discuss what I think is a very important issue to any law student, and that is obviously the bar exam. You guys are very, very close to completing what I like to call phase two of your legal life. Phase one is the LSAT and the law school application process. Phase two is actually getting through law school. And then phase three is the bar exam and your career thereafter. So the fact that you're here on a Saturday shows your commitment to this and your desire to want to learn from your former peers about their experiences, and hopefully all of you will take at least one thing away from this panel. I don't like to talk a lot during these panels, but I'd like to have our alums share their experiences. But I do like to give just a short little speech in the beginning, kind of a rah-rah speech, just to kind of tell you about my personal experiences and also things that you guys should be thinking about now, looking forward to May and beyond, because many of you will commence your bar studying the day after commencement, unfortunately. So I like to call myself a survivor of the New York State bar exam. I took the July 2007 exam and passed on the first try, so thank God for that. I took the exam in Manhattan, so if any of you think you'll be taking the exam in Manhattan, come and talk to me. It's a lovely experience. But, you know, for those of you, and I know we have a lot of part-time students here, how many of you expect to be working full-time and studying for the bar? Okay. How many of you will be working part-time and studying for the bar? Okay. And for the rest of you, not working at all and studying for the bar. Okay, so we've got a mixture here. Studying for the bar in and of itself is a full-time job. It can become a 9-to-9 job, 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. And it's a balance. Regardless of whether you're going to be working full-time, working part-time, or not working at all, and focusing primarily on the bar exam, there's a lot of important things that you need to do. One is scheduling and maintain a consistent schedule. Second is taking time out for yourself. Third, having a support system, whether it be your spouse, your partner, your kids, your family, your friends. You know, support systems are very important. You need people there who are going to be your cheerleaders, but who are also going to help you maintain some sense of sanity. Fourth is you have to take care of your body. One of the conversations that came up yesterday in the panel is that a lot of people become so ingrained in bar exam studying that they let everything else go. And one of our panelists yesterday said that he called a lot of his friends a week before the examination to see how they were doing, and everybody had some sort of cold or flu or back pain or headache or, you know, consistent migraines. And that's because your brain is functioning in a way that it's not used to functioning. It's absorbing a lot of material. You're learning a lot of material. You're doing a lot of work on a daily basis, and you're just not used to that. Plus, your lifestyle has changed drastically because you have to alter it to the bar exam. So we'll certainly talk about that. But it's really important that you treat this as a job if you are outside of the jobs that you already have, and that you take it seriously. Trust me, when you get your passed letter in October or November, or you go onto everything's now viral, so you go onto the website and log in and says, congratulations, you will feel a huge weight off your shoulders. You'll probably cry like I did. and you'll be glad that you probably never have to take a bar exam again unless you decide to take a jurisdiction like Maryland that has no reciprocity, and we'll talk about that too. There's two things that Dean Jaffe always says, and he has props. I don't have the props today because I forgot to bring the props with me, but there's two things that are very, very important when you're studying for the bar exam. First, earplugs. How many of you have been using earplugs throughout law school to study or on examinations? Couple? Okay. Earplugs will save your life on the bar. Let me tell you why. The day of the exam, you'll hear a lot of this. People shuffling papers. There may be the girl who's doing this the entire time. There may be someone who's sniffing the entire time. In the Virginia exam this past July, and Kirsten will talk about this, she wasn't in the room where it happened, but someone had a seizure. So you had medics and bar exam staff and everybody.
That was still going on.
Yeah, running around. Guess what? They're not going to stop the clock, okay? They will attend to the person who is ill, but you got to keep on trucking, all right? When I took the exam, the girl behind me had a panic attack. So earplugs are great because they help you drown out some of the noise around you, okay? If you're not accustomed to using earplugs, I suggest that you maybe start now while you're studying, or maybe use them if you have any final exams this spring, or start using them when you begin studying for the bar exam. There are plenty of earplugs available in the library that you can just pick up, or you can go to CVS and get a pack of 50 for like 10 bucks, which is what I did. But earplugs are great. You have to get accustomed to using them, but once you do, they are wonderful. And you are allowed to bring earplugs, as many earplugs as you want, into the bar exam, so definitely utilize those. The second thing that Team Jaffe uses as a prop is a stress ball, okay? A lot of you probably have stress balls. You can get them anywhere. I have about 5 or 6 on my desk. We, Office of Student Affairs, used to have a whole box of stress balls, but we gave them out during, I think it was Opportunities Day, but we were going to reorder stress balls so anybody can come by and pick one up. The reason why a stress ball is great is that some of you may not be typing your exam. How many of you think you're going to be handwriting your examination? No? Okay. There are some jurisdictions where they actually want everyone to use a laptop. There are some jurisdictions where you can apply to use a laptop, but it's not guaranteed. For those of you taking the Virginia bar, there's a short answer portion of the Virginia bar, and that portion you must handwrite. You cannot type your answer. Most of us, if we try to handwrite for more than...
Sorry, I'm sorry to interrupt. Security just wants to know if it's cold in here.
Are you guys cold?
Want it warmer?
No, it's fine. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Most of us, you know, we are so accustomed to using our laptops or other electronic devices that we don't really handwrite too much anymore. I know for me, when I try to handwrite a letter, my hand cramps up usually 2 or 3 minutes into writing. Stress balls are great because you can use them to exercise the muscles in your hand. And if you do ultimately decide to handwrite the bar exam, or if you're in a jurisdiction where you do apply for a laptop but get denied and must handwrite the examination, when you're writing 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, maybe 10 essays in a day, your hand's going to hurt. So it's a good way to start working on the muscles in your hand. What I did, when I took the bar at 07, actually there were not that many laptop programs out there. The laptop concept with bar exams is actually a fairly new one. So I handwrote the New York bar. I every night would, when I did my outlines, reviewing my notes from the day's lecture, I actually handwrote everything to make sure that I was accustomed to handwriting. I handwrote all of my essays. I handwrote all of my outlines, and then I also have a stress ball as well. It's a great way to condition yourself and to condition the muscle in your hand, because remember, day one of the bar exam for most of you is going to be the written portion of the bar exam, 3 hours in the morning, 3 hours in the afternoon, and that's a lot of writing, especially when you're not accustomed to writing that much, okay? So, with that being said, I'm gonna introduce our panelists. The way we're going to do this, the format of this is going to be, first we're going to talk about the actual studying for the bar. We're going to discuss for each jurisdiction what the panelists did to prepare, what bar review course they took. This, when it comes to bar review courses, as you know, the law school cannot officially endorse any bar review courses, but the panelists are open to discuss which one they took, why they took it, you know, how the format worked for them. I'm also going to ask them to discuss the subject matters. At this point, there's no more classes for you to take. And some of you may have had an eye on the bar exam and taken certain classes and took certain classes throughout your 3 or 4 years here to prepare you for that. You're not going to be able to prepare for every single subject that's tested on the bar, but I want the panelists to discuss that, if there's any classes that they took in law school that they thought were helpful and they felt prepared, and if there were any subjects that they said, oh, I wish I had taken it, but, you know, I got through it and it was fine. And then the second part, we're actually going to talk about the day of the exam. We are fortunate that Ms. Kirsten took 2 exams. She took Virginia and New Jersey, which I still am trying to figure out how she did that. So if there are any of you who are considering doing two jurisdictions, she's going to be a great resource to talk about that, how she studied, how she was able to study for Virginia, but then also learn the New Jersey nuances, and also just the logistics involved in traveling. The bar exam, not only is it an academic exercise, not only is it a psychological exercise, it's also an exercise in planning, okay? Whether you like it or not, you're going to have to plan pretty early in the process because there's a lot of things going on. You have to know where you're going. You have to, most of you will be booking a hotel room. There's a lot of just little bits and pieces involved. And then at the end, we're going to discuss kind of just the application process. If you have questions while we're having this discussion, please, please, please raise your hand, ask the question. I don't want you to sit there and say, oh, I really want to know what such and such is like, but I'm afraid to ask. Don't be afraid to ask. Yesterday's panel was fantastic because we just had a lot of great questions that were asked by the students, and I thought our panelists did a fantastic job of addressing them. So please ask any questions that may arise. There is a handout on this front table. If you have not received it, you can pick it up now, or you can pick it up at the end of the panel. Just a brief explanation of it. That handout is a chart that I create every year for students. Basically what it is I've selected the jurisdictions that most WCL students take. You may know this, you may not. New York, Maryland, and Virginia are the most popular jurisdictions for WCL grads. California is fourth, and then it kind of trickles down from there. So what I've done is I've compiled for you key information for those jurisdictions. The date of the examination, the application fee, the filing deadlines, the MPRE. Okay, most of you hopefully have taken the MPRE or plan on taking the MPRE before you graduate. The next MPRE is being administered in April. As you know, you cannot be admitted into most jurisdictions, Maryland being the exception, without an MPRE score. However, if you are taking Maryland and want to waive into the District of Columbia, you must take the MPRE, okay? And then I've also included in there reciprocity. Okay, I always get questions about reciprocity from students, so this year when I created the chart, I added information about reciprocity and whether or not the jurisdictions have good reciprocity or bad reciprocity, or no reciprocity at all. So that's the handout. If you have any questions about that, you can certainly come and talk to me later. So I'm done. I promise I'm not going to talk anymore. So I'm going to introduce our panelists, and then we're going to get started. We're going to start with Daniela first when we open up the discussion. She's going to discuss Maryland and kind of what she did to prepare for it. So first, Daniela Cornejo, who many of you probably know, and all of our graduates are 2012, May 2012 graduates. Daniela was in the evening program here at WCL, and she took and successfully passed the July Maryland exam, and she used Barbara's for prep course. And Daniela currently works as an immigration attorney at Deutsche Kolleg, is it APIN?
APIN
in Washington, D.C. And Daniela was also an Integrated Curriculum Dean's Fellow. She was Law Review? Law Review. Okay.
I only did the fun stuff.
But she was very involved here at WCL, even as an evening student, and she was always a joy to work with.
Clinic, for sure.
Clinic, yeah.
We're always in clinic.
Next is Kirsten Soto. Kirsten is our Virginia and / New Jersey rep. Kirsten is currently an associate at Gilbert LLP in Washington, D.C., and she represents corporate policy holders in insurance coverage litigation. Kirsten became involved in the American Bar Association Tort Trial and Insurance Practice Section as a law student, and she continues to hold leadership positions within the organization. And when she was here as an evening student, she was a research assistant for a consultant specializing in complex commercial vehicle collision investigation. She was a senior symposia editor for the Administrative Law Review and was a student attorney in the evening section of the General Practice Clinic. And finally, our New York representative, Carlos Valdivia. Carlos is currently an associate at Reed Smith here in D.C. He's a member of the Global Regulatory Enforcement Group, and his practice focuses on international and domestic regulatory compliance and enforcement actions. Carlos was on the International Law Review, as well as the executive board of the Moot Court Honor Society, and he received honors for an oral argument in the William C. the International Commercial Arbitration Moot Court, and he worked with the Disability Rights Law Clinic. So, with all of that being said, also, can we give a round of applause for our panelists for coming out? So, Ms. Danielle is going to start off and talk about the Maryland Bar and her experience in terms of studying, how she prepared for it, the schedule that she kept. And then we'll have Kirsten discuss Virginia as well as New Jersey and how she balanced those two. And Kirsten also worked part-time during the summer while she was studying. And then Carlos will round us out and talk about my favorite state, New York, my home state.
Sure. All right, so let's see. First thing is preparing for the bar. I think the first thing that I did was to get all of my logistics in check. So basically, you have to figure out where you're going to eat, where you're going to sleep, what you're going to eat, and where you're going to study. If you're taking a prep course, which I strongly recommend because it gives you a heavy schedule and it gives you the material ready for you to just be able to tackle it. So that was the first thing, to get basically all of your things that you have to worry about in check. Your banking, tell your family, look, this is what's going to happen in the next 2 months. You need to expect me not to be there very much or often, and if you want to have time with me, we can schedule that an hour. I mean, it's pretty much like law school. I worked full-time and did the evening program for my first 2 years, and I had a big schedule that said, okay, the semester is going to last 15 weeks, and this is what I'm going to be doing from this hour to that hour. So it was the same thing, except I would say 12 hours are devoted then to the bar exam study. And so you schedule things. You schedule everything. You schedule, okay, like for example, my regular day would be wake up around 6. I actually lived out in Fairfax during the exam, so I would listen to the podcast of the lecture or whatever on my way to the lecture. I'd have breakfast, then I'd go to lecture, then there's a little bit of time for studying, there's a little more time for studying. I'd go home, eat a little bit, study a little more, and then exercise. I think you mentioned something that's really important, and that is to keep your body in check, because otherwise your brain's not going to work well. So I knew that I had to put in the best fuel. I mean, like a car, right? So, I have a balanced breakfast, and I had the same thing every day for lunch, that I have a scheduled time on Sundays that I would prep for the week, and same thing with dinner. So it didn't take any time for me to think, oh, man, what am I going to eat, or where am I going to eat, or when am I going to do groceries? I need to do that. So all of that was just automatic. It would just function. And I know what I needed to do, what I needed to get done. So all my brain power was devoted to absorbing the material, which is a lot of material. I think that the bar exam is not particularly difficult. Just like law school, I think, is not particularly difficult. It's just the volume of material that you have to be able to know a little or something about and make, respond to these questions. Maryland, the heaviest and most important part is the essays. The particular subjects for Maryland are, I think, family. I think they have ethics because you don't need to take the MPRE. I would recommend to take it anyway if you want to waive into DC. I did. I am still in the process of waiving into DC. It's just that volume that you have to get somewhat knowledgeable about, and preparing is just being on top of your planning. Everything that's going to be a distraction, you need to get rid of, and you need to figure that out now. So if you're like trying to think, oh, maybe I'm going to break up with, do it now, break up your girlfriend, your boyfriend now. You know what I mean? Like if you're going to get in a big fight with your parents, do it now, or just say, look, the months during the bar exam, we can't really talk about feelings or anything like that. So I'm out.
I don't want to share my feelings.
So no, but it's important. And I think that personally, the way I balanced my personal life was to say, people that care about me you manage your expectations, and they know when they're going to see you and for how long, and that you're probably going to be really caffeinated and or like kind of dead. But you manage the expectations, and then you can move, and that makes you happy, obviously, because another thing is that you have to be happy and, like, mentally prepared to be in this, just sort of another one of those hoops that lost school students and whatever. You know, we have to go through this thing. It's like a hazing program. This is the last part. So, but yeah, that's how I prepared for it. It had to be organized, and the material had to be in, I mean, you gotta know yourself by now, how you study. It's not about what the other guy next to you is doing, because, you know, at this point, you know, you should have realized that you know how to study, and you know what works, and you know yourself. You know when you're peaking as far as your attention levels and when you tend to slack. Maybe that's in the morning, maybe that's at night. I don't know, but you already know that. So you focus on your good study habits, and you make sure that those are maximized in the time that you have during the day. I think that's it.
Did you take any time off in terms of, like, did you have a regularly scheduled, because your schedule sounds very regimented, which
yeah.
is good.
Yeah.
Did you have a scheduled, like, okay, I'm not going to study on Saturday nights or Sunday mornings or whatever the case may be?
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely it. Like, I like to go out with my buddies and have a few beers, and I knew that I had to schedule that. And I mean, how much time, that free time that you do now, you know, like you have to tail it down. So for example, this summer, I remember I was like, okay, I said that for 4th of July, I was able to go out, and it was great, and I look forward to all of like a month for that. But yeah, I mean, you have to schedule that in and know that if you don't schedule your time will just go, and then you realize that there's this huge mountain of things that you're supposed to know. Another thing is with a Barbie, it keeps you in track, I think. It keeps you track, it keeps you accountable, but I also think it's kind of crazy the amount of information that you're supposed to do or the homework that you're supposed to do. But again, it's about how you know yourself and how you know whether you're maxing out on your studying and you're really putting all of your effort, or if you know that you're like, well, yeah, I mean, because you can't, I mean, it's just like with law school. You can't say, well, if I don't do it today, I'll just do it tomorrow and catch up, because you can't. You won't, like, you'll just simply will not be able to go back to the material that you should have seen at that hour, because that hour's gone. And then, you know, there's going to be a million other things that you need to learn. But, I mean, I think it can sound overwhelming, but it's not. Yeah, I mean, I think the videos are just, I mean, the lectures are just basically the videos anyway.
Yeah, the only exception to that, at least I know for Virginia,
right.
They have a live course at GW, which I guess is what they record the videos from, and then they show the videos a week later. So if you are really committed to being in a classroom and you're really used to that with a live person in front of you, then get signed up early to determine which, if any, I don't know about for Maryland, if they have any locations that are live. For me, I just did the videos from home because I live out in Manassas, so I did not want to schlep all the way into D.C. or northern, you know, further into northern Virginia. So for me, the videos were fine. I could pause them. That was, you know, the best strategy for me.
Keep in mind that if you're someone who needs to discipline yourself to get up every morning and go somewhere, you may not want to do the online video at home. You all know yourself, as Daniela just said, but, you know, there are certainly people whom I've spoken to who said, oh, no, if I stay at home and watch a video, I'm going to pause it, I'm going to eat a snack, I'm going to walk the dog. It will take me 7 hours to get through a three-hour video. And if you feel that you're one of those people, you probably don't want to do the video at home. But, again, the way that you study is going to be tailored to your lifestyle and what's best for you. And Carlos, you can talk about
what's what I was going to
say. Do you have anything else?
Well, I do, but I'll wait my turn.
Okay. So
to follow up on the same issue, I mean, I'm wrestling. So I live in Northern Virginia, and the whole thing of the amount of time it takes to would take me to commute, and what it would cost for commuting and parking, whether I take metro or whether I have to go drive to park. I'm wrestling with that versus the amount of time that I would be spending working on it going home. And one of the things that I'm thinking about is on lecture days do that at home, but on the days for practice tests, go in and actually do the practice test in the room.
That was my original plan. I never actually went into the place to take the tests. I have a room in my house that is my office, and I shut the door and told my husband, don't bother me for this many hours. But I do think that is a good strategy, especially if you feel like you're going to need to be in that environment, because it is a very different environment, as you all probably know. For example, during law school, I did not come to the law school to study for exams because I didn't want to be in that environment of everyone being so stressed and high energy and such anxiety. But that is good preparation for the test, because when you're in that exam room with however many hundreds of people, that's the environment you're going to be in. So I do think that's a good strategy if you can discipline yourself.
Do you have a question?
Yeah, I had one quick question. Daniela, you said that you were still in the process of waving into D.C. I'm just curious if there's something about that process that is.
We'll actually get to that.
Okay.
If you could hold that question.
For the day of the test, you said that you had your hotel and everything. I think it's, I'm assuming you've probably been in Baltimore since it's been this year. And how long before the test did you get there?
We're going to get to that too. I just want to allow Kirsten and Carlos to talk about their experiences studying for Virginia and New York respectively, and then we'll go in and talk about logistics and hotel reservations and all that stuff, because as Daniela said, that's a very big important part of all of this.
I know we kind of talked about whether better to stay home, watch the video, go in, and it's kind of a personal time to study best, but is there some sort of statistics, like what percent of students go in, like do majority of people go in somewhere to go, like do we?
I mean, that's something you'd have to talk to the bar review course probably individually about. There's no national, at least as far as I know, there's no national statistics on that.
They do say something at the beginning of, at least for Virginia, one of the videos said, there are more people who pass who go in than people who stay home. And I think that's because there's a lot of people who stay home and are not disciplined to watch the videos. If you all, I assume a lot of you are evening students, you know how to manage your time, you know how to balance working and doing schoolwork. So, I mean, for me, it was a personal choice, and I was used to working from home and having that discipline. So for me, it worked. But for some people, they said they just really feel better being physically in the room and having that time when they have to be sitting there watching the video.
And I mean,
yeah, just a word on videos versus attending them in the lecture hall. I know we've already discussed that some people need the discipline of attending where other people are actively engaged and paying attention. But you have to take into account other distractions that you might have at home that you would not have in the lecture hall. It's very easy if you have roommates, say, for them to come into the room and say, like, hey, we're having a cookout. You're not going to watch the video. You're going to go to the cookout. So if you're in the lecture hall, it just minimizes the distractions that are going to be imposed upon you.
Kirsten, why don't you go ahead and talk about...
They run between approximately 4 hours a day.
Remember, some subjects may also be multiple days. Evidence is one of those subjects that takes up multiple days.
Yeah.
Usually wills. Civil procedure, property, wills in Virginia, because Virginia loves wills.
CPLR.
CPLR is the New York civil practice. So, but yeah, it's usually on average, usually 3.5-4 hours. But some of the denser subjects, particularly the MBE subjects, you may have multiple days, and those may be longer lectures each day. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, the Barbie video the course that I had was here. So we were in room 402 or whatever, the big one. So, I mean, it was like coming to class. And I know WCL, I know, like, if I need a printer or if I need a study room. So I know, it was like a good area for me to have. And I used the time that I had to commute to play that's another cool thing. I'm not a Barbie rep at all. I mean, if it was Kevin, whatever, I'd say. But you could get it on your iPhone. It's cool. So I, like, this property lecture I don't know if you guys know her, the property lecturer.
Yeah.
She was hilarious.
Singer.
Love it. Property is a tough subject. And so she has all these weird singing things. But I just hook her
that
up.
They're really annoying, but yeah. Then they help you actually remember.
Remember,
things.
Yeah. But I just, you know, while I'm driving, this lady's going on and on and about or whatever. So, but, I mean, the environment here is exactly that. The video's there, and you have to check in your pass. So it's accountability, you know?
Any more questions? Okay.
Okay, so I took Virginia and New Jersey. I took Barbary. I did the videos from home. The videos from home from Virginia, you actually start, the videos start the Monday after graduation. I know the live course started the week before graduation, so I had friends who were already in their bar review course before graduation even. So the videos from home, about 4 hours every day. The good thing for me was basically part of the Barbary plan is they give you a handout, and it varies from subject to subject, but generally what they want you to do is they want you to listen to the lecture, go through that handout, fill in blanks, and then later in the evening they want you to go back and review your notes and summarize your notes and then basically put them in a format you'll study from. I do not study that way. I did not find that helpful. So what I did find helpful was basically I created an outline as I was going throughout each lecture, and that's what I did in law school too. I started basically, I didn't do this 1L year, but 2 and 3, 4L year. I started my outline from day one, and it was just my running outline the whole time. So that was good in that I didn't go back and re-summarize my notes. It was bad in that I basically ended up pausing the lecture frequently because there would be a chunk of text in the outline that they gave me that I felt like I needed to kind of think over and summarize and put my own words to put in my notes. So there were, for the heavier subjects, there were days where it might have been a four-hour video that I would have spent 7 hours on because in the process of watching the video, I was taking my own notes. I feel like at the end of the day, that was the best way for me to study, but there were also days when it was incredibly frustrating where I would get to, you know, I got up probably around 8 or 9. I did not get up in there as early as and would start the videos around 10 a.m. because that's usually when they would get posted. And there were days when it would get to be 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon and I was still not done with the video. And that was, you know, a frustrating thing to look at. But in the long run, it helped me to sort of put things in my own words and not feel like I was doing work over again. The Barbary course will also give you, they'll give you a list of, you know, this is the video you need to watch today. This is the reading you need to do to prepare for that, and then this is your homework. And the homework is usually going to be some practice multiple choice questions and then some practice essays. Usually the way they do the essays, now for Virginia, there are a lot of subjects, and there are a lot of essay subjects. So the way they would usually break that up is they would, you know, teach you the subject, say, wills. And then that same day, they would say, okay, go and do an essay or two on wills. The way I did that was I kind of focused more on the multiple choice questions, I would say, in May and June, and focused more on the essays in July, because I just didn't feel I had enough of a grasp of the subjects in June to be really delving into the essays. There were some essays I would look at, and they say, basically, when you're starting to do the essays, you know, use your outline the first couple times you do an essay and just kind of try to bullet point it. You don't necessarily need to write out every single essay because they'll give you sometimes, I know there were probably some days when I was supposed to have done a half a dozen or 10 essays. And there's no way I'm going to sit down and write that many essays in one day after doing the videos. So I would start out that way. And then once you get into July and like the clock is really ticking, that's when you start setting aside your notes and you go, okay, I really need to try to do this from, you know, even if I feel like I don't totally know this subject, I need to put myself in that mode of, okay, let's say I get an essay question and I read it and I have zero idea what to say about it. What do I do? Like, what can I pull up? What can I come up with to at least make some sort of a coherent answer? And that will freak you out the first couple times you do it because you'll think that you know the subjects and then there'll be a question that wasn't covered in any way in the process, and then you'll go back and you'll look at your notes again or you'll look at the prep book again and kind of figure out how to piece that together. So that was sort of my plan. I did work but it was very much part-time, and I worked from home, basically research and then summarizing depositions. So it was very much a thing where I was just given a pile of work and was told, get it done by this deadline. So I would kind of work it in here and there when I needed a break from the bar studying. I did, generally speaking, have, you know, either Friday night or Saturday afternoon and evening as my free time to kind of spend time with my husband. But for me, working from home was the best option because I have, you know, my own separate space. I have my own office in my house where I could shut myself in there when I needed some physical activity, which I'm sure I still did not get enough of, but I had a garden, so I would go out and pull some vegetables out of the garden to make for dinner or do something like that. So again, like everybody has said, I think it's about knowing what has worked for you best in law school and continuing with that plan, and not not just because, you know, the person sitting next to you maybe has made flashcards all through law school, you think you need to start doing that. Don't rework the entire way you study. Try to stick with the same patterns you've had throughout law school that have worked for you.
Can you talk about just how you incorporated New Jersey?
New Jersey. So, New Jersey, there really isn't much more to study. There was one additional video. They sent me a DVD. The video was, I think, an hour and a half, and most of the video was just basically how to study for two exams. There wasn't a whole lot of substance to it. Basically, the New Jersey exam, the only things you need to know are the same things you need to know for the MBE. So there really wasn't anything additional to study. I took a picture when I got the books. My Virginia books stacked up like this, Virginia and MBE, and then my New Jersey pamphlet was like this, because it's basically New Jersey Civ Pro, which very closely mirrors federal civil procedure. So you're basically going to learn everything you need to know doing whatever your primary course is. Of course, a lot of people take New York, New Jersey. So there really isn't a whole lot additional to study. The only thing I really did additional for that, and this did not happen until July, I put it off, was they give you some sample essays from New Jersey. And the style of those essays was very different from the style from the Virginia exam. So I just did a few of those practice essays to kind of get myself in the mindset of what style of essay it was going to be. And there were it's not a practical skills sort of essay as much as I think New York has the practical skills section. But there's just some different styles. So that's basically how I did that. And it was relatively minimal planning. The hardest part of New Jersey was working out the logistics of physically getting from Roanoke, Virginia to Atlantic City, New Jersey between Wednesday night and Thursday morning.
In terms of how you study and comparing studying for bar versus studying for law school, and when you're taking a law school exam, you're trying to get the highest possible grade, you're worried about rank and all this, and in the bar exam, you're worried about passing the bar exam. And how do you, you know, there's some subjects you're good at, you know them, you did them really well in law school, and there's some subjects maybe you didn't take that course in law school, or you're just not that good at. How do you balance how to study and how aggressively you worked on different things?
So for Virginia, because there are so many subjects, you really can't get in the mindset of law school of I'm trying to get an A. There are...
You can't do that. Actually, regardless of what jurisdiction you're taking, yeah, you can't get into the mindset of that. That's
right.
Just my opinion.
Right. I think there is it 27 or 20?
20, it's 27 or 28 for
Virginia. Yeah, 27, 28 subjects for Virginia. And some of them you will have never done in law school. I don't care what classes you've taken. You won't have studied this. And Virginia civil procedure is a whole separate animal. And they want you to use the Latin terms. That's part of what they test sometimes on the short answer. Yeah, Virginia has some nuances. And I'll talk about that more when we talk about the actual exam day. But they want you to know some of the Latin. They want you to know these specific things about Virginia that you better know or you're not going to pass. So it becomes more about just the volume of material, and that basically fills your time over the idea of I have to get an A. And even the subjects that you do well in law school, there will be some variations for the MBE that will probably throw you for a loop. For me, the MBE was the hardest part to study for. I figure with an essay, I can pretty much talk my way out of it. MBE, you can't talk your way out of a multiple choice answer. So that was the most challenging part for me. And the Barbary course, and again, I'm not plugging for Barbary, but it worked for me. They have a system where basically you keep redoing these multiple choice questions over and over again to kind of teach you what are the themes of what is tested on the MBE. And what I started doing, because I noticed there were times when I would step away from a subject for 3 or 4 days and I'd come back to it and I noticed there were certain themes that I would just constantly get wrong. So I created a separate outline for myself of these are the questions I consistently get wrong or I'm just a little bit off on. And then that was a separate supplemental study aid for me so that I felt a little bit better about some of the more difficult areas.
Can I just add a word of caution? You'll hear some people say to you that bar exam is a minimal competency exam. And, you know, what they're trying to say to you is that you don't have to study for it as if you were trying to be at the top of your class. But at the same time, you won't know how you stack up to everybody else that's taking the bar exam, so you should prepare for it as if you are competing with people in your class. So don't get lulled into a sense of, you know, oh, I just need to make, you know, one point above the passing grade, the failing grade. That's not the case.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that the vast volume of it makes you compromise in the quality of response that you're expecting from yourself, right? So, and that's it. I mean, once you realize how much material you have to be knowledgeable on, you realize that you're not going to be able to give a dissertation on whatever. You know what I mean? So you have to be, yeah, I mean, I think that the, you know, the idea of not making you feel that you shouldn't be competing, but I think that as always, you know, you always should be competing with yourself and knowing, okay, well, what's the hardest that I can go, you know, as long as I cover every single subject? Because that's, I think, the challenge.
And to a certain extent, it becomes a race against time. So it's more about how quickly can you call up some sort of a competent answer as opposed to how well you can formulate a beautifully worded essay that would be published in a law review.
And inevitably, you will make stuff up. I mean, you'll be like, something, and it's like, no, that's
this
completely incorrect.
Right.
You're like, yeah, it sounds great. No, it's all wrong. But you know what? That's just the nature of the beast. Especially if it's a subject where you've struggled and you've tried as much as you can to get through it. For me, with secure transactions, I was like, I don't understand any of this stuff. You know, at some point, you know what you know, and you'll get points. I mean, they will find ways to give you points, even if sometimes your analysis may be slightly off. And that's the key thing about practicing. You know, in Maryland, for example, as Daniela said, Maryland essays count, like, I think it's 60% of
it's
the examination.
Huge.
It's a huge part of the exam. And so if you're taking the Maryland bar, you really want to focus on, you should certainly focus on the MBE as well, but essays are critical. And do as many practice essays as you possibly can for Maryland, because I've talked to students who have failed the Maryland bar, and they've come back to me and they said, you know what, I put all my eggs in the MBE basket, and I didn't focus on the essays, and the essays killed me. And that's why I failed, and that's why I'm sitting for this exam again in February. You don't want to be that person.
And that's the only thing about Barbie, though, that it's a little heavy on the practicing of the multiple choice questions. And Maryland is so, 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 so important to make sure that you get those essays in and to practice them over. I mean, you're not going to know them, but you're not going to figure out what you don't know if you're not practicing them. But it is. The Barbie's heavy on the multiple choice questions, and you can easily say, okay, well, I did whatever, you know, 10 hours of studying, and maybe I didn't get to my essays. But though you have to get to your essays, even if it means you won't do like the 50 or 100 questions that you're assigned that day.
We'll take your question and then we'll let Carlos talk about New York. Go ahead.
For practicing the essays for Maryland, do you have someone read them over, or is there like a grading thing that Barbara gives you? Like,
yeah.
I know what you're doing.
So basically, the thing is that they have an online sort of program, and then they give you the prompt of the essay, and then you write it out. And some of them, you submit to them, and then they grade it, and then they give it back to you with some comments, and then whatever points you would get. And at the beginning, it's kind of embarrassing because it's like, oh,
yeah,
like, you have no idea. This is terrible. Learn how to write.
You get a one.
You get a one, yeah. But then, you know, as this time comes closer and you have a better, because at that point, you're just trying to figure out what the subjects are about, and then later on, you're able to write a little better about it. But they do, they give you feedback. Not on all of the essays that you write, but on a fair amount, and it's up to you to do them, because a lot of times you don't, you know, people don't get to do them, to submit them in time, and they have due dates on when they're supposed to be submitted, but yeah, they give you feedback. It's up to you, though. If you don't do it, you can't get the feedback.
All right, Carlos, why don't you talk about New York and its really weird format and multiple choice questions and...
All right, well, before I launch into detail about the New York bar exam, I just want to impress three things upon you. First, you're going to fall behind. You're all going to fall behind, and that's okay. You should also be aware that time discipline, the mechanics of the exam, are as important as the substance of law. And finally, you should not be making any major changes, as Daniela pointed out earlier. I think the most extreme example I heard somebody say is like, if you're addicted to something and have been throughout law school, now's not the time to quit. I'm not advocating for addiction by any means, but if you're a smoker, you should probably wait till after the bar exam to quit. So the New York bar exam, it's 50 multiple choice questions for New York, the MBE, five essays, and what is commonly referred to as the MPT, the performance test. You can't give short shrift to the performance test or the multiple choice questions for New York or the essays. So how do you manage the multiple topics that are on that examination? I believe there are 14.
No, like 22.
22? Just kidding. 14,
well, plus the MBE, I think there's maybe 10 or 11 New York topics, and then the MBE.
Well, not the MBE ones, the New York.
Oh, yeah, 14, yes, that's...
that reconciles the difference, good. I was like, I left points on the table. So, part of it is just being judicious. I think we were talking before about subjects. And what do you do when one subject is particularly troublesome? If you're taking the New York bar, there are some things that you're simply going to be unfamiliar with, like how New York deals with creditors, or a lot of contract law that's particular to New York. There are a lot of exceptions that you have to build into what you've already learned as a 1L. And so you have to focus on those areas that are new and devote a little bit more time to that as opposed to relearning the things that you have already learned as one else. So going back to my first point about how you're going to fall behind and that's okay, I have a confession. I attended maybe five lectures, you know, and saw many of the videos online, but I watched a lot of those videos online in about like 2 weeks before the exam. That's just how I roll.
And you still passed.
I still passed. It's not a big deal. You'll have a stack of books about yay high, and I wanted to bring my binder. This is what I distilled it down to. So you have to do what works for you. What works for me is tricking my brain into memorizing a lot of material, so using a lot of tricks that emphasize short-term memory, drilling, basically. So, for example, if I was trying to learn contracts, I would try to learn as much as I could in one day, repeat that with a distilled version in note cards 10 minutes after my study session, then an hour after my study session, and then a day. And the idea would be to just ingrain that in my short-term memory, do that for every subject in a staggered basis. So by the time I'm reaching the exam date, I'm peaking in terms of the information that I'm retaining. So come the exam date, I'll see keywords, things that I've drilled, and be able to identify the correct answer for the MBE, or be able to use those keywords in the essay portion of my exam. For the MPT, it's slightly different. It's not testing your analytical ability or knowledge of the law. It's testing your organization skills, and it's also testing your ability to follow instructions. It's, I think, worth 10% of your overall score. It's not something that you can dismiss, or you can, but do so at your own peril. So when you're trying to do that, you're trying to fulfill all the instructions on the performance test in the amount of time that you allotted for yourself. I can talk about the breakdown of time later, but if you're taking the bar prep course, they'll have recommendations for you. Just follow those recommendations. That's what I did. It was fun for the data, the exam. We can go into more detail about that later. But MPT, stick to the instructions. Try to abide by them. And as far as not changing any habits, obviously I didn't change my habits, because that's how I study as a law student, is waiting 2 weeks before the exam to learn the material.
For those of you who are taking Virginia, you can ignore the MPT talk, because there is no MPT on Virginia.
Right.
Maryland also utilizes the MPT.
It's a lot of fun.
It's a whole bunch of... Just go back to your legal writer closed memo, and that's pretty much what the MPT is. But Carlos is right. It's really an exercise in organization. You're given what's called a file in the library, and you basically just have to take the documents that are included in that file and library and write a letter to a client, or it's annoying. It's like the most annoying part to me, at least, because you're like,
I love that part.
Yeah, but you don't have, it's mindless in that you don't have to remember, you know, exception, New York exceptions or Maryland exceptions, because it's the state of Franklin or something. I don't know, but they, you're using what's given to you.
Yeah, I recall for my MPT, it was making an outline for a brief. And you do precisely that. You outline it. I mean, your instinct is to start writing an essay about it for each discrete section of that outline. Don't do that. You're going to get stuck in 1A, write an essay on 1A, and you're going to miss everything from, you know, subsection 2 and 3 that you were supposed to outline. So
basically, they give you, like, a case, and they give you all the law that you would need, and it's, you know, not real. So you just have to be on top of it and, like, use common sense and be... If you do clinic, it'll come really easy to you. It'll be like, oh, okay, cool, except that you have only however minutes, I don't
90.
Know.
90.
Yeah, 90 minutes.
That's
so
recommended.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you're...
Well, it's different. New York, the way New York does it, they put everything in 1 3-hour block, and they're like, you figure it out
right.
on your own.
In the morning, we had the 50 questions and, let's see, 2 essays in the morning. And how you divide that up is up to you. In fact, I think they give you the essays first in the handout. They give you the essays first and then the questions. You should not do the essays first. You know, you're going to get comfortable with the essays, remember stuff, and then you're going to want to write more about it because you're feeling good about it and you're afraid of the New York questions. Just do the New York questions, stick to your time. After your a lot of time goes up, you're on question 49 and 50, you're done. Don't even look at 50. Start moving on to the essays.
Yeah, and then I think for Maryland, they actually allot the 90 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a suggested time. But, I mean, again, Barbary, they'll tell you what to do, and, like, this is something you don't have to worry about right now. But you'll figure out your timing, and you have to follow it, and you have to be disciplined. And, of course, the only way to know how that works is if you test it out. You know, you have to do a full test and figure out, am I hitting the mark? And when it's time to stop, and you just move on. You have to.
Yeah. As far as, like, actually teaching yourself how to take the exam, you need to set out some time in your study schedule to actually write out essays under those conditions. To write out the essays and make sure you're hitting the right notes. Have the time to go through one of the sample answer essays so you have something to compare it to. If you try to do that, you know, 2 weeks before the exam, you know, essays were one of the things that I did before that time, right? Because that's not something that you can just incorporate into the drilling that you would do for the MBE. So before that 2-week window, you should know how long it takes you to get through an essay and whether you actually have the substance down. And as far as learning other parts of the exam, think you need to go through, they give you certain practice tests that you can use for each subject matter. And what I would do is go through each one to figure out my strength, my relative strength for each subject matter. So if you can do that before 2 weeks, that's great. You know, if you've been learning the material and have been on track and stuff like that, that'll be very useful to you. But if you've fallen behind, as many of you will, and begin to take those practice exams, all you will do is instill a sense of panic because you really haven't learned anything. And you should be taking those practice exams until you really spend some time with a particular subject and feel confident that you, I don't know, memorize 75% of the material, something like that.
Kind of going off on that whole practice exam, to make that distinction between, the LSAT was more learn how to take the exam, so you had a lot of opportunities to do practice exams, and I found that very helpful when I was doing that. Now with the bar, that, it is different in the sense that you have to memorize all this material. Do you still feel like you had sufficient opportunities outside of those, practice mini, multiple choice that you were doing every evening to kind of feel like you were getting simulated exam opportunities? I mean, I know the bar is so long, so it's different, but
I want to say that practice exams were a way to simulate test taking. They were, for me, they were more like a gauge of whether what I was studying was translating to a result. So if, for example, I had been spending 3 days on contract law and I took a practice exam on day three and I didn't meet a certain level, then studied contracts for another day and took the exam again and didn't see any improvement, then I knew that I was either doing something, studying something incorrectly, or that I should stop focusing on contracts and just move on to another area of law. So, at some point you have to figure out what you're going to use those practice exams for. For me, it was just a gauge as to determine whether there was any room for improvement and time to move on, or if it was, it's a lot more for self-assessment, I think, than to actually teach you how to take the test.
I think that's right. I mean, if you find yourself doing, for me, my strongest subject was crim law and procedure, and I was always scoring high on those. At some point, I walked away from crim law. I'm like, this is a waste of my time to focus so much on crim law when I pretty much know the material. Again, secure transaction was my Achilles heel, so I went and started writing secure transactions essays. Or, all of you are going to be tested on procedure, civil procedure, state and possibly federal as well. And so that's very technical. There's a lot of, days and numbers and Latin terms to memorize. And inevitably, you're going to see a civil procedure question on your bar exam, whichever state you take. I mean, states love to test civil procedures. So you may want to focus on practicing civil procedure essays. I mean, as you progress, and in the beginning, you don't know anything. So don't feel, you get your first essay back, you're like, oh, this is horrible. But you don't know anything. But once you get to 2-3 weeks out and you've done so many practice questions and you've been hopefully assessed through essays and done possibly an MBE simulation, you'll start to get a gauge of where you're at. And then that's when you start deviating away from, what the bar review company is telling you, and you'll focus more on one subject area and less on another. And everybody does that. I mean, my friends and I, a week before the bar exam, none of us were following the schedule that the bar review company had set out for us. We had kind of just created our own schedules and were doing things based off of what we felt we knew and what we knew we didn't know enough of. And so that you're all going to do that, because that's how you pass the test. You have to know your strength. You have to acknowledge your strengths and be glad that you know those things, but you also have to acknowledge your weaknesses. Because if you don't acknowledge your weaknesses, you're not going to pass the exam, because inevitably you'll have, you know, there was a secure transactions essay on my bar exam, and I was like, see, and I was so happy that I had focused on secure transactions for 2 days before the exam, because if I hadn't, I probably would not have scored well on that essay. And I don't know how I scored in that essay, and I don't care at this point, but you're gonna do that, and I'm sure everyone up here did that. You have to. It's just the nature of how this entire process works. Kirsten, did you?
I think the other thing that the practice, especially essays, are helpful with is, at least for Virginia, there will be things that will be tested on the exam, on the essay portion, that will not be covered in the 4-hour video or 12 hours of video, depending on what course it is. And a lot of the way I ended up learning those was doing the practice essays. Even if I did not fully write out an answer, I, at a minimum, went through the question, tried to outline something that I thought might be an answer, and then you look at the actual answer that they give you. And that helped me to fill in my outline as I went to go, okay, this is a theme that keeps reoccurring in these sample essay questions. And most of the sample essay questions, if not all of them, are pulled from actual exams. So you will see themes that appear in the essay questions that will help you to supplement your studying. So even if you don't feel like you have the time to sit down and write out the essays, again, in Virginia, I think it is 60%, same as Maryland, 60% for essays. At a minimum, try to at least go through and read the questions, and even if you have no clue how to answer them, then go look at the answer and, you know, test yourself again on it the next day.
Yeah. There was another thing that I wanted to mention was that, you know, I found a mentor who's basically my buddy who had taken the bar the year before. And there's things that you just ask that, like, you want to know that are maybe seem basic, but Barbie won't tell you or whatever. Like, here I am at this point. Like, I feel this way about this. How do you think about it? You know, now, obviously, I'd be happy to, you know, give you my email or whatever if you feel like that you need someone like that. But is that one of the things that I remember Julia telling me was, you know what, don't waste your time with essays if you're not going to take them seriously. Like, at this point, take the essay, take those, I think it was 30 minutes, I can't remember. But basically, any time and every time that I was doing a practice essay, I was doing it like it would be the test. I was going to sit down, I was going to shut everything off, I was going to time myself, and I was going to write it out. You know, at the beginning, I didn't know a lot of the substance that well. And the answers were crappy. But I had to take the time to look, okay, now I know about the specific thing, because after the essay, I will review it, and I'll learn the material. And then later on, it was more about, okay, well, how well did I do? Much better in the substance. But those 30 minutes or whatever that take, pretending that every time that I took an essay was the exam, by the time it was, like, the actual essay, it was like second nature. It was just like, okay, we're doing this, 30 minutes, bam, bam. Like, it was just, you know, like, practice.
It's also good to practice taking them first thing in the morning, because if you only practice taking them in the afternoon after you've had several hours of studying, that's not how the exam is. You're going to be in there at, what, 8, 9 o'clock in the morning, and you're starting cold. So yeah. Force yourself to take a couple of essays starting at 9 a.m. and go through it. That'll be something you do later in July, but make yourself do that so that it's more like the actual exam.
Okay, and that is a good segue into the exam itself and the day of the exam and yay, the exam. So we're gonna go in reverse order. We'll start with Carlos. Carlos took the New York exam in Buffalo. God help.
Oh, yeah. It was in July. If I had taken the February exam, I think I would have been in trouble.
Yeah, probably. So why don't you talk about New York in terms of when you get your assignment? You did laptop program, correct?
I did.
Okay. And also logistics, getting to Buffalo, when you reserved your hotel room, all that stuff.
Reserve your hotel room early. There's one hotel in particular, I believe it's an embassy, that is closest to the hotel site without sacrificing certain creature comforts. So if you can reserve your hotel room there, that's best. If you're taking it in Albany, Manhattan, just make sure that you're, you know, getting someplace that's nearby, that you actually take the time to go there early. So I was in Buffalo before the date of the exam, figuring out how exactly I would get to the test site, figuring out what exactly I would take with me. Two number two pencils, two mechanical pencils, an eraser, Advil, as well as an assorted number of medicines, handkerchiefs, as well as for people weeping next to me, because I was going to fly through that exam so fast I would leave them in tears. Earplugs, just in case. I mean, I don't, you know, mind noise so much, but there was definitely a guy at the exam site that was, he was sitting right next to me, and all he could do before the exam was tap his foot and go, I thought to myself, my God, I'm going to strangle this man. So, do that well in advance. I actually went up to Syracuse to stay with my in-laws, who were just absolutely great. They fed me, they checked in on me and said, like, are you doing okay? And they gave me their living room where I could study in peace. So I was acclimating myself to the peculiar temperature of New York at the time. And from Syracuse, I just drove up to Buffalo, I think. Well, I actually have it right here, on the 23rd. I have it written down. I actually had, one week, well before, I had everything written down exactly what I would do for each date. Monday the 23rd, drive to Buffalo, do any flashcards you want to review on the drive there, and then I have the exam days. And, so that's what I did day of. I will say this, you will have an opportunity to either buy lunch, and they will hand it out at the test site. If you're fortunate enough to have somebody with you, as I did with my wife, they might be kind enough to buy lunch for you and bring it to you. That's the best. You know, everybody's like waiting in line for their sandwiches. You know, you can have a cozy salad delivered if somebody's willing. So,
how much time did you have for lunch?
Maybe less than an hour. I think they say an hour, but it's not an hour. You have to account for the time that you will be filing out of the building and filing back in. So you have less than that to get food. So buying your lunch from the examiners makes a lot of sense for people.
And keep in mind that New York does not allow you to bring any food with you into the exam, so you can't bring your lunch with you into the test room. So yes, if you have someone who's with you who can come to the site and bring you food, that's ideal, because in Albany, for example, there are four different test sites, but there aren't many food options. And so many more people take the exam in Albany than they do in Buffalo. So you may have 500 people running to McDonald's to get, you know, fries or whatever. And you may be standing in that line for half an hour and then have 10 minutes most to scarf down whatever you just ate. And, you know, eating McDonald's very quickly and then going back into an examination is not the best idea. So, you know, if you are going to have someone with you, you may want to ask that person to kindly meet you at 12:05 or 12, whatever time, and bring you food. If you're taking the examination in New York City, which you will be assigned to New York City if you are a New York State resident, it's a whole different animal. Most test takers in New York City take it at the Jacob Javits Center, which is the big convention center on the west side of Manhattan. The Javits Center is awful, so I didn't take it there, fortunately, but there's usually about 1,500 to 2,000 people in a room at the Javits Center. In that case, lunch is a free-for-all. You find what you can, you know, in the area around you, but you do have to return within a specific amount of time. Does New York still make people wear those bracelets?
They do.
Yes.
Don't take off your bracelet. Bad idea.
Yeah, they give you bracelets, which you must keep on for both days of the exam. You feel like you've been marked, but, you know. But the funny part is that, especially if you take it in Manhattan, you know, after the day one, everyone scatters about. Most people stay in hotels, and you'll be in, like, a bar somewhere and you'll see 20 people with the braces and you're like, oh, you took the bar. You know, you don't want to talk to them because they'll want to talk about the exam with you. It's like, no, I don't want to talk to you. But yes.
Yeah, don't talk to them. Especially the crying people.
Yeah, don't talk to them. The crying people. Yesterday, Dean Jaffe told a story about how someone was crying on the sidewalk and like a guy just stepped over her and just like kept on walking.
if that isn't a perfect metaphor. For the legal profession, right?
Yeah. All right. So why don't you, Kirsten, why don't you talk about Virginia?
Together. Okay. So Virginia, the summer exam is in beautiful Roanoke at the Civic Center. There are, I was in the room where basically we're on the Civic Center floor. You're in there with, I'm bad at guessing crowd numbers, 700,000-800,000 people. I don't know, ton of people. You're basically at tables like this, except they're older and not as clean, and you will be very close together for the most part. It was probably about 60 degrees in the room. They had the AC on full blast the whole time. So, well, I will address this now. Everyone has to wear a suit to the Virginia bar exam. You have to appear as though you are appearing in Virginia Circuit Court. That includes your shoes, so don't think you can wear a suit and tennis shoes. In the Virginia Barbary course, they give the example of someone who came to the exam in, I believe, a leopard print tracksuit, and she was sent home to change at her hotel before she was allowed to return and take the exam. So ladies, considering the cold, I would suggest that you bring a sweater, wear a pantsuit. Gentlemen as well, bring an extra sweater. I saw a lot of people going out to their cars, and they actually allowed people to put on sweatshirts, which is obviously not court attire, but it was so cold that they let people do that. Virginia is extremely strict about what you can bring into the exam room. That means you have your laptop, you have your power cord, you have, I believe it was 6 pencils. They cannot be mechanical pencils. They have to be the regular old pencils you used in the third grade. You can have 1 eraser. You can have a packet of tissues, 1 set of earplugs, and I think that's it. And then you can have 2 pens for the essay days, but not for the MBE day. And everything has to go into a plastic bag, and you carry that in, and that's all you can have. So nothing else, no wallet, and your ID. And your whatever little card they give you to get in. So I would strongly suggest, if at all possible, taking a car to the site if you're not planning to drive down or you're going to be there with a friend. For me, my car became very important because that became my home base during the break, or I could go back and look at my cell phone, or I had my notes if I had a moment of just, I just need to look at my notes that one last time. You could go and look through those because you can't even physically bring them into the Civic Center site. In terms of the logistics of lunch, there was a Sheetz across the street where you could get subs. There was a Subway. I think there was a McDonald's. And that was about it. Some of the Virginia law schools had bag lunches for their students. But that was pretty much just strictly the Virginia Law School, so basically everyone else filtered over to the Sheetz or the Subway. For me, part of my bar exam planning was trying to figure out what can I eat for lunch that is not going to make my stomach upset. So I actually sort of trained myself to start eating protein bars about a week or two before the exam, so that that was my backup of, okay, it has some sort of nutritional quality to it. It's not going to make my stomach upset. If I feel like I can't eat anything, you know, nearby, I will just keep that in my car, or a peanut butter and jelly sandwich that can sit in my car and it's not going to go bad in the 90-degree heat. What else? I did use my laptop. The laptop registration, they'll give you an email. You've got to sign up for that, I think, about a month in advance, and they're really strict about, you have to download this program, you have to do it by this date, otherwise you can't use your laptop. There are tech people there on the site, so if something happens where, you know, your laptop starts to shut down or it's not working with the program, you raise your hand and they come over and they help you. I saw that happen to a couple of people. Fortunately, it did not happen to me. I think they pretty much got everyone through it, and there were a lot of tech people standing around. So I would just say plan to be in the most comfortable suit you can possibly think of, because you will be in very uncomfortable chairs, it will be cold. It's a very institutional setting. There is one restroom in the back of the room that everyone has to use. It was not pleasant by the end of the day, and that's all I will say about that, because no one was allowed to leave and go use the rest of the rooms in the Civic Center. So just be prepared for some annoyances in that regard.
Why don't you talk about your trip to Atlantic City?
Oh, yeah, trip to Atlantic City. So that only would have happened. That only happened because my wonderful husband came with me. So basically, the southernmost New Jersey site is Atlantic City. I assume that most people who live in this area are assigned to that, because they assign you based on where you live. I guess if you're in New York City, there are a whole bunch more sites that are north of that. So I got, oh, I should have spoken about the hotel too. For Roanoke, I reserved my hotel probably in March or April, and my strategy was I wanted to be as reasonably far away from the Civic Center as possible, because I did not want to be around a bunch of other people taking the exam. That did not work out so well, because in Roanoke there's only so many hotels, so I showed up at the hotel thinking, oh, I'm like 10-15 minutes away, there's no way anyone's going to be here. The hotel was full. I checked in, the woman said, oh, you're here for the exam? Great, okay. Do you need a wake-up call? So basically the hotel was full of everybody taking the exam. But I did make sure I reserved far enough in advance so that I had a nice hotel that was clean, that had free breakfast if I wanted it and all that. Atlantic City, I reserved the hotel that is literally across the street from the exam location, because I knew that it would be 7-8 hour drive up there and I would be getting there really late, and then have to roll out of bed and make it over to New Jersey to the exam. They were far less strict about, you know, everybody was in sweatpants, yoga pants, whatever. Less strict regarding, you know, what you could bring into the exam. Everyone, basically, ladies had their purses, men had their wallets and everything. Those things did have to be left outside of the exam room. So again, that's just something you want to think about. You're in the convention center, and theoretically there are people there kind of watching things, but I'm not sure how closely they were actually watching everything. So New Jersey, they tell you to bring a lunch with you, and they have a place where everyone leaves their little sack lunches, and then you can go pick them up. I was not keen on that idea, so my husband and I just went and had lunch across the street during the lunch break. And the good thing about New Jersey is for the essays, most of your essays happen in the morning, so I think it was, I've blocked it from my mind now, it was either 3 or 4 in the morning, and then about an hour, hour and a half for lunch, and then it was 4 in the morning, hour and a half for lunch, 3 in the afternoon. So basically, the New Jersey second day, you're done by probably about 2-3 o'clock, and then you can be free. And go have fun.
My understanding in Virginia was that they didn't have good Wi-Fi access, and that people were running to submit their laptop portions across the street or whatever. Can you speak to that?
I think that's a myth. That did not happen in my room, and my room was the largest room. There were some delays in people submitting things, but basically what they do is they give you, I'm trying to think if we even had to do Wi-Fi. Because in Virginia, they actually give you a thumb drive, and you put the thumb drive in your computer and you save it to there, and then you go and turn it in when you're leaving. So, yeah, I think that's an urban myth. Don't listen to everything on the internet.
Yeah, if I could just say that my friend was in the room.
Oh, well, then that's different. Yeah, that's not the experience I had, okay. But...
Yeah, if I could just add, because I didn't touch on it, on laptops in New York and how you submit it. If you're doing it electronically, you have to download your file, and they give you until a certain deadline.
New Jersey does that too.
Right.
Yep.
To upload it. So you don't have to be in the test-taking site with Wi-Fi in order to upload your answers. You just have to go back to your hotel room, you know, take an Ethernet cord with you so that you don't have to rely on Wi-Fi, and then upload your answer within the deadline.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just basic, right? You can read directions, and I think that that's the key part. The Bar Association or whatever, they have a list of things that you can and cannot bring. Read that list. And the day of the exam, that kind of small thing is not something that needs to be on your mind. You already know exactly what you're going to be taking into the exam. You already know exactly what you're going to wear. And I knew exactly what I was going to eat because that it was exactly what I had been eating for the past 2 months. So my stomach was not going to do anything crazy, and it expected that amount of food and that amount of caffeine at that time. Simulating the, you know, the week before, I knew that I was going to be, at that time during that day, I was going to be taking the exam or whatever. And at that time during that day, I was going to be eating my salad with the 6 ounces of protein or whatever, right? Because, like, the physical body part, I didn't want that to be part of something that influenced my mental ability to take the exam. So for Maryland, it was easy. There was a little bit of delay until they assigned the location. Once you know what your location is, then you were able to book the hotel. But that wasn't until not that far ahead, which made me a little bit nervous. But because, as I said, when you're doing your studying, you already should have all of your logistics in check. So that's something that you had to take time off the studying and try to figure out, where's this hotel, blah, 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 blah. Is there going to be parking? I took my Jeep, and it had a cooler inside with all of my food. So I rolled in there, and I did a test run the day before, just figure out what the location is like.
What location were you in?
It was in the universities. It's like this joint thing up in... Shady Grove. So, yeah, the day before I drove up there, some people just took the metro because it's metro accessible, but I stayed in the hotel up there. And the day before, I went to see where the room is, what it looked like, how to get in, where the bathrooms are in association to, you know, your room. And the test site I thought was awesome. I mean, it was like a room kind of like this. The tables were nice. The chairs were comfortable. But, you know, the day of the exam, I was just rolling in. I had my, you know, my little Ziploc bag, and I didn't really talk to anybody because I wasn't there to talk. I was there to take the exam. So it was, you know, game day, and you roll in, and you just make sure that you have everything that they expect you to have. And I think there's a little paper that you have to bring in, and ID and stuff like that. When it was time to break, I left for the food I ate or whatever, and then I went back. But I think that it's really, really important not to underestimate the physical part of it, that you will be drained by the second day. I mean, I was tired, and I had been tired all along the studying process, but the amount of intensity that I think requires to take the first day of the exam is a fair amount. And then the second part, or the first part of the second day, is also a fair amount. But I just remember, after that lunch, I was just like, oh my gosh, I am actually really, really, really just exhausted. And so to train your brain to say, are you going to be able to respond however many answers or however many essays, even though when you're just like wiped out and tired, and, you know, to be prepared to that, because I think that's also a big part of the test, just being like, are you going to be able to, like, do it?
Question? So that's what I wanted to ask about. Is there a way to prep for, like, having, in essence, 3 exams in a row? Because in law school, generally have it staggered. Do you actually take a full-length practice test? And, okay, I was assuming so. But how many and at what intervals of the process do you do that?
I'm trying to remember. I think they did a full-length practice test, I want to say a week or two before.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do a whole lot of the full-length marathon exams in the week before your exam. I would do that, say, the first 2 weeks of July. So I did not have a fun 4th of July. I did not do anything over 4th of July, but I do know people who were more disciplined getting their stuff done earlier in June and then took that time off. Basically, the last week before the exam is more about the drills like Carlos was talking about and just really being quick on your feet. But, you know, the full day exams will somewhat prepare you for that, but to a certain extent, just the 2-3 days, depending on what exam you're taking, the 2-3 days in a row, there's only so much you can really prepare yourself for that. I mean, I felt like after the 3rd day I had been hit by a Mack truck and I slept pretty much all day Friday afternoon. Yeah, and just kind of, I think the food thing is important, of just disciplining yourself and being on, sticking with food that you have prepared your body for so that you don't make yourself ill during the exam?
I think what's important, well, actually, I'll, two things. First, going back to the hotel reservations, Virginia, obviously, you know, it's in Roanoke. Go with God. Like, if you want to book a hotel room now, actually, and you may want to look at booking a hotel room now because
just early.
they know you're coming, so they're going to jack the rates up.
And if you can get a hotel, part of my reason to book so early was I wanted a hotel that would have a mini fridge so that I could keep,
well,
you know, yogurt,
your stash.
Right, yeah, my stash of snacks.
Oh, snacks.
So, right, yeah, snacks, right.
One thing that I did when I mean, here's, if you're taking the New York bar and you know you're going to be taking it in New York City, don't book a hotel room, you know, in Harlem. Don't book a hotel room on the Upper East Side, because guess what? It's going to take you forever to get to the Javits Center, or, I mean, most of the test sites are Midtown Manhattan. So look at hotels in Midtown. I found a hotel, and I didn't even realize that I had done this, and in hindsight, it was probably genius on my part, that had free breakfast in the morning. So I didn't eat a huge full breakfast because I didn't, you know, I wasn't sure how that was going to work out, but, you know, at least I could get some fruit, some cereal, and I didn't have to pay for it, which was great. Another thing is, if you're taking the exam in New York City and you're not very familiar with the New York subway system, you should really do a test run the day before. Just as everybody did, you know, driving to the site or walking to the site, do a test run on the subway, or if you have to use public transportation, do a test run the day before, and give yourself plenty of time. I showed up to the bar, to the site, and the site opened at 7, I think, or 7:30. I was there at like 6 o'clock in the morning, along with the thousands of other people. I mean, we just stood in line on the street. It was ridiculous, but it's better to be early than be late, because if you're late, they're not going to let you in. So, and they're very, very strict about time. And with hotels, particularly if you're taking the Maryland bar, what I recommend is, as Danielle said, you're not going to get your test site until, you know, June, or maybe, yeah, mid to late June. So book a hotel room in Baltimore, book a hotel room, if you know, up near Shady Grove, or if you think you're going to be driving to Shady Grove, then don't book a hotel room in that area. And then the other Maryland test site is the fairgrounds, the Timonium's.
Oh, I heard that was terrible. And that depends on how early you get your application. Because a buddy of mine, that's it. It's like, it's all about logistics. Like right now, like all that stuff that you need to get in for the bar application, do it like as soon as possible. Get it in early. You just get it done, because then they will assign you in that. And the fairgrounds apparently was like an awful site, and it was for the cats that like send in their application later on. Like,
it's right,
you don't have to worry about that for New York. You send in your application after.
Yeah, the fairgrounds smell terrible. All my friends who took Maryland took it at the fairgrounds, and they were like, oh my God.
I heard North Carolina's like that too.
Yeah, they were like, it was the worst. It smelled like horses.
Yeah, it was a fire.
So.
And the tables were just like,
yeah, the tables were from like 1922. I mean, it just, they said it was the worst experience ever. So, you know, just book hotels. You can always cancel. Make sure you don't pay up front, obviously. And you can always cancel, you know, usually it's 24, 48 hours ahead of the scheduled date. And just, it's a safety net. And if you have to cancel, you cancel. But at least you know, you have the peace of mind knowing that you have something in place. And then once you get your test site, again, assuming you're not in Virginia and you definitively know where you're taking the exam, you have that locked down. So we're going to, the last part, and then we'll field any more questions, is just talking about the application. As Carlos said, New York is a little bit different because they don't require the character and fitness application up front, so you're just applying to sit for the exam for New York. But for Virginia and Maryland, you are doing character and fitness and submitting that with your bar exam application. So if you could both talk about when you started working on the application, how long it took you to complete it, you know, things that you had to deal with, such as getting undergraduate transcripts and I think fingerprinting for Virginia and all that crazy stuff.
I think we have a question back here.
Oh, is there a question?
Before we move on.
Yeah.
Super big question. A little confused. Two days. All of them are 2 days.
California's three.
Oh,
yeah.
That's why it's
Texas is two and a half. But
two and a half.
Yeah, it's
So there's really no way to take the two exams that are on the, scheduled on the same dates, like
no, you can't do that.
Virginia. There's nothing you can do about that.
No. Take it in February.
Quick question about how do you time? Do they have a big clock? Can you bring a watch in?
Oh, actually, that's a good question. Because I had a minor panic during the exam about time. So Virginia, you can bring a watch. It cannot be a digital watch. Can't be a digital watch. So you can bring a watch in. There is also in Virginia, but not New Jersey, there was a big clock up at the front of the room. New Jersey, they just announced, I think, when you had, you know, 30 minutes or an hour left, I can't remember exactly. So they will tell you, okay, we're starting now, and you have, you know, your 3-hour time period, and you just kind of watch your watch and make sure you actually pay attention to the start time, because the first portion I had a moment of panic because I thought more time had passed than had actually passed.
One good thing to do is actually write the start time down on, you'll have
Virginia.
You can't do that?
They didn't. I think, yeah, you could write it on your, if you have a little, yeah, you can write
it. If you have a watch, if you're allowed to bring in a watch, like write it down on your test booklet or a piece of paper or something. And then what I actually did was, so I forgot how many minutes they recommend for the, because again, I've cleared the entire experience out of my head, but for whatever it is for New York, I would write down the increments of when I should be done with each part, so at least, and it takes like a minute to do that, but trust me, it actually helps.
Right. If you are starting at 9 and you're allotting 90 minutes for 50 questions, then you want to say that you're going to be done at 10:30. Yeah. 10:30 comes around.
Yeah.
Again, not digital, nothing that makes noise.
Yeah, it has to be. I think that's the same with Marin.
And just be aware that the projects might be on a different
time
schedule.
Yeah, so that's why you want to look at your watch when they say start, so you know based on your time.
As far as time goes, is it worse to not finish or to do?
Is it worse to not finish
as opposed to writing or not being as sure about the certainty of answers? So just about the timing goes.
You're not going to be sure about the answer. You're going to come out of there thinking that you failed.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's a natural reaction that most people have when they come out of the bar exam.
So not finishing, I mean, just...
It's better
bullet points are your best friend. If you find yourself writing an essay and you're like, oh, I have 2 minutes left, start writing bullet points, because at least if you get some things down, you may get points for that. That's what I was always taught.
Quickly make up a rule.
Yeah.
Make, apply it.
Right. Yeah.
Write a nifty conclusion saying why it should go one way, and that's it.
Yeah. You'll get some points.
Yeah.
We're talking about getting ready with hotels. Is there some place we can look up, like, where our likely test location will be? Like, if you know.
Where do you think you're going to take the bar?
Probably in New York City. So.
You sure about that? Are you a New York State resident?
Yeah.
Okay. The Midtown Manhattan. I mean. Everybody stayed, when I took it, everybody stayed at the New Yorker, which I did not. I stayed at a smaller hotel. I was like, well, there's less chance of people taking the bar there. But I would say from a geographic range, maybe 34th Street furthest north, like 55th, you know, like a 20 block radius in New York City. Because A, you're near all the major subway lines by doing that, and B, you're probably going to be at the Javits Center. So it's easy to get to the Javits Center when you're in that area, as opposed to if you're all the way downtown or all the way uptown. That's my recommendation.
So what was your question about
the application?
Right.
Yeah.
So I think it's important, because I think that this session is useful for, I mean, a lot of reasons, but to get yourself in the mindset of what should I do in the next, whatever, 3 or 4 months before the summer starts. And I think that there's a couple things. The first one is to get your bar application in, whenever that is. I have no idea when the early application is. But, I mean, I don't know. A lot of you may have been working for the federal government, and it's the same tedious process that a security clearance requires, right? So you got to list all of your employment and where you live forever and where you studied and all that stuff. And if you haven't done that, it takes a little bit of time. It's like, okay, well, I need to know where all my bank accounts, I need to know all of these things. So it takes time. And if you create yourself, I already have this because I had to do some security clearance stuff. You know, just like a database. This is where I've lived for the past 20 years. I already know from this date and all that stuff. And you got to get some documents. If you've had any trouble with the police, you got to get some documents. Or another thing, never lie, just like you didn't lie in your law school applications about any issues that you've had with the police. I say this
even like traffic tickets. Like, traffic, you need to remember if you ever had a traffic ticket.
Yes.
You know, pull your driving record.
Whatever the question is, I think the best policy is to over-disclose than under. I say this to my clients all the time. But anyway, yes. But get that stuff done, and get that stuff done early, because sometimes some of these things delay. And follow up on the contacts, because you have to list your work references, and they have to contact your bosses, and they have to fill out paperwork that has to go back into them. And all of that takes time. And you know that you have probably one or two supervisors that were kind of like, well, yeah, I mean, I kind of remember that kid. I guess I'll send the paperwork or not. And so you got to be with your references, too. You have personal references and professional references. They have to fill out stuff and then send it back. So you got to make sure that you pick good ones that you know are going to get back to them on time. The character fitness interview for Maryland was short. I had to go up to an attorney's office in Silver Spring, I think. And the lady was just like, all right, let's see, right on, everything's good. It took like 3 minutes, literally 3 minutes. She said, okay, everything's good, this is a formality. So you went to AU, that's great. Anyway, good luck. And that was it. She didn't ask anything. Like, I was like, all right, I shut up. She was like, you don't look like a shitty character. And I was like, thank you. And that was it. That was it. But, you know, all of this takes time, and if this is in the last of your semester, so you're about to graduate, and there's all these things you have to worry about with graduation, right? And get all of the logistics stuff out, you know? Like, you've got to figure out your transcript. You've got to figure out your transcript with here and your transcript with undergrad, and if you went to, you have any master's degrees or anything, you have to contact that school. Sometimes they accept only some certain kind of affidavits or certain kind of transcripts. You got to make sure that that gets done. And then another suggestion that I had was to start getting your files in check. Barbie provides you big outlines of the main core subjects, but I don't know where you've put your 1L papers or your outlines or whatever. Maybe now is a good time to start digging that up. If you think that that may be something that you want to use, where are they? Like, take the time on a Saturday afternoon, a Saturday night, you're feeling wild. Like, where's my contract outline? You know, where's my torts
That's
outline?
That's a sad Saturday.
So, but I'm serious, because that takes time, and it's time that you won't have. You know, graduation will come, there'll be parties, you'll be partying, it'll be crazy, and then it's like, bam, time to study. Where are my outlines? You don't have the time for that. Do it now. Take a look at those. Look at the big picture of your big subject. Now is a good time to do it.
I have a quick question. You know, I went to college away from where I grew up, and I always kept my permanent address as my parents' house, although I lived in dorms and apartments and things like that. How does that work on our application?
You still have to list
physical location where you're staying.
Yeah. I mean, my thing is err on the side of even like, and that's the thing that I think is most annoying about is I lived overseas and I was like, I couldn't remember where I lived.
That happened to me too. I couldn't remember.
And it's domestic and international. Like you need to put. They're not gonna check up on all these places. I can guarantee you that. But you need to list it anyway, because I think for most applications, it's since you were 18 years old.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, even if you, and that's what I do. I maintain my parents' permanent residence all throughout college, but I still put down all the dorms, all the apartment buildings I lived in, just because I wanted to err on the side of, you know, giving too much information as opposed to leaving some stuff out. The last thing you want to do is get a letter or a call from them saying, why didn't you tell us about XYZ? And it's like, oh, man, and that just delays your admission. So follow what they say and just include all that stuff in there.
How do you deal with working someplace that's closed?
You just explain it. I mean, just like with everything that's complicated, you know, I had some experiences abroad where the NGO no longer exists, and it's just that you list it and then you explain. This is no longer, I haven't been able to contact, but I'm disclosing that this is where it worked. I mean, they're not, you know, they're not going to ask you for something you can't get, but it's better to have them know that you're trying, giving good effort, and explaining stuff. My application had a lot of addendums.
In terms of getting together stuff from the law school, you mentioned transcripts, but the application that I'm working on has a dean's certification.
Registrar's office.
Okay, yeah. So when do I need to get that to them, and do I need to stay on top of them? Obviously, like, I'll do a check-in, but how good are they about getting that stuff out?
They're pretty quick about it. I think I just
emailed. This is rote for them. They do this every year.
I think I just emailed the registrar and they said, oh yeah, we know. We'll
did you
send
do it now with the documentation or did you do it after?
I think I did it. What state are you?
Illinois.
Okay. No, for Virginia, the application was due May 10th. I think I emailed them around the beginning of May or something, because Virginia, you don't have to have that portion in until June. And they just said, yeah, we know. We'll send it.
Keep in mind that the law schools, and I can say this because I know this for a fact as an administrator, the law school's deadline to certify that you graduated is not the same deadline as your bar application deadline. Obviously, your bar application is due before you graduate from here. So the school has its own individual deadline, and trust me, they know those deadlines like the back of their hand. They get that stuff out on time, and so, you can email them probably late April. I mean, whatever the deadline, and just say, I'm taking Illinois, here's the form. They'll get it out to Illinois on time. Has been, then David.
I'm just curious, does anyone understand, because I'm confused, there's like these filing deadlines for Maryland, and then it's like the late filing deadline, but the first one's already passed, and so I'm thinking that the late one's fine, but I don't really understand what these two deadlines are. It looks like there's just a difference in cost.
No, it is a difference in cost, that's exactly what it is. It's, if you were really on top of your stuff, you would have filed it. I didn't. Which is surprising because
New Jersey's like that too.
It's it's a $25 difference. Keep in mind that Maryland also has the character and fitness fee, but I think that fee is the same regardless of whether you filed 2 weeks ago or.
But your application doesn't like change in substance or anything, or you don't like.
No, it's right. I mean, I think it's just to encourage people to apply as early as possible because they have to do all these character fitness interviews before. I don't know if they have to do it before the bar, but anyway.
3 minute interviews.
Yeah. Well, they have to make an attorney go and meet with some. So yeah.
But New Jersey, it will matter significantly in terms of price.
Cost. Yeah.
It like doubles basically. It goes from I think 400 to 800 or something like that.
Then I had just one other question. I mean, as far as reviewing substance, what sort of review did you do before you started your actual bar review course? I know you said you kind of dug up the old outlines, but did you go? I mean, does it make sense to start sort of digging into some of those subjects ahead of time?
Focus on graduation and whatever examinations you have, and then
have some time at the game.
Remember you're starting the day after commencement, so it's not really.
It's only
it's a really cookout.
I think Barbary has a 2-day review course or something that you can do before the courses start. I think I did it, but it was the same thing. It was just like, man, there's so much I gotta learn. But no, you're not gonna, it's just know where your stuff is and get situated so you don't have to worry about all of that stuff when you're learning, because they'll teach you.
Try to reach your peak when you're entering the exam. You don't want to burn out just before it. So,
David.
The Virginia application, they have to submit a certificate of enrollment with the application and the certification of graduation after. The registrar also do the certificate of enrollment.
Yeah, they just did a letter.
So
basically,
it's stuck up on the registrar's office. Because I looked on their website and I didn't see anything.
Yeah, I think they just did a letter, right?
It's a form letter.
The registrar, and then they forwarded me to the dean's office.
Michelle?
Just also substance of the exam. I'm just wondering how you do the on and off switch when it comes to NBE versus the state-specific substance. Did you find yourself having trouble differentiating?
For me, the way I did it was I would do blocks. So I would do, say, one whole day of just MBE stuff. And then I would do one whole day focusing mostly on essays. That's not the way Barbary recommends you do it. They recommend you do kind of half and half. But that didn't work for me in terms of the way I learn. And they'll give you, basically, for the MBE stuff, you know, you'll get scores. You'll grade your exams, or if you do it on the iPhone or online, they'll print out, okay, you have this much percent correct. And you'll be able to gauge from there, like Myra was saying, okay, I don't need to study Crim Pro or Crim Law anymore, for example, because I'm getting, you know, a 70%, and a 70% on the practice MBEs is amazing. don't be surprised when you take the practice MBEs and you do very poorly. For example, you will have the practice full-length MBE right around 4th of July weekend, yes. And that is designed to be extremely hard and scare you into studying harder for the next 3 weeks. And that's where it's good, like Danny said, to have a mentor who has recently taken the exam that you can go to and say, oh my gosh, I just got my score back. Yeah. It was awful.
Don't spoil all the fun.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, they'll tell you this on the Barbary video, too. The woman comes up and says she got, I don't know, a 91 out of 200 on her practice MBE and then actually studied and passed the exam. So,
New York, Character and Fitness, I mean... He's like, what character?
Please. It's not something that you have to worry about now.
Do they do it after, or how does that work?
Oh. Yeah. Once you, you can start gathering your material, but you're, and they'll send you a letter saying, oh, when you should submit your application. For us, the deadline was December 10th, January 24th, admissions process. If you're unlucky like me, you'll have someone in your past that doesn't send in affidavits on time. So, you know, be sure to stay on top of people and have them submit stuff. For New York, any legal employment, including internships, you must get an affidavit from that employer. So if you know that you worked for somebody that was a bit of a flake, you should get on top of it right after the bar exam. Hey, I just passed the bar exam. I need an affidavit. And they'll say, oh, great, that's wonderful, fantastic. I'll send an affidavit right away. Yeah. Follow up every week.
It also includes dean's fellowships. So if you were a dean's fellow for a professor here, that professor also has to complete an affidavit. So just keep that. I'm not a professor, obviously, but we've certainly received a lot of affidavits that were routed to our office, and they were like, please send to such and such professor. It's like, well, no. So that does include any employment that you had here at the law school as a dean's fellow, so keep that in mind. Yes, question in the back.
I'm currently an LMA student, and I'm actually
I became an expert on wasting time as I was studying for the bar exam. You say you have 4 weeks until? You're not in the best position if you're only starting to study substance now, but you can get through it. You have to figure out what helps you remain focused. For me, what helps me remain focused is the pressure of knowing that the bar exam is in 2 weeks. So you might have to wait 2 weeks until it kicks in. But anything that you can do now to help you prepare for that time is time well spent. So for me, it was making the things that would let me study in a short window. And that in particular, I'm not saying that you should do this, you should do what works for you. But in that time frame, I reduced the volume of material that I had down to this binder, and I also created a set of flashcards for every subject. That way, when crunch time really came around and I had to drill this stuff into my short-term memory, I would take a stack of note cards for a discrete subject matter, go through it, and then at the end of my review session, I have two stacks of cards, those that I knew very well and those that I didn't. and then I would go through that stack of cards until I had another pile, until I didn't have anything left. And then I just drill that until I could go through one stack of cards and know that I had learned the subject. Again, I'm not saying that you should make note cards these in the weeks leading up to the exam, but you should start preparing for the things that are going to help you when you're going to be focused. And if you're like me, you feel a lot more focused and a lot more prone to doing what you have to do when you get closer to the deadline. Then you'll be okay. You know, don't try not to panic.
Yeah, I mean, I think this process brings anxiety. It's meant to be a big deal. I think there's two things. I think one, you definitely gotta be, you gotta stay true to yourself and know yourself. But also, I think that no matter what big of a deal this test is, I think we also have to always stay kind with each other because it really helps. I found that whenever anyone needed any help or anything like that with my, not a study group, but the people that came to see the lecture, you know, you build your surroundings with positive energy, and this sounds super new agey now that I just said it, especially because I have a talk about feelings, but it's true, you know, if you're kind to yourself and you're kind to others, that is going to bring a positive attitude, and then when you go in and take the exam, it's going to be the same way, you know, and you have to have that peace with yourself, knowing that, okay, I've studied as much as I can, and I've challenged as much as I can, myself and my own standards, and that reduces anxiety, I think, from test taking. And once you know that you have done that, then you know you just go and take the test.
Your preparation will reduce the anxiety. Just get started on something. You know, you don't have to, you know, decide to knock out an entire subject matter in a day or something like that. Just get started on something, feel comfortable with it, and once you start feeling comfortable with it, your confidence will fall.
So,
question over.
Oh, there's Kyle, and then Michelle.
This goes back to obtaining affidavits from your employers. This include, I'm assuming that include three law school.
Well, for New York, it was all law-related stuff. So if before law school you were, say, a paralegal or something along those lines, then you would have to find an affidavit for it. Other stuff, you wouldn't need the affidavit, but you would have to list that as your prior one.
Michelle?
I don't know if it's a different reason. So
the contents of that binder was just a reduction of all the materials that you had, and was it a result of just not having enough time anymore, or...
No, it's not that I had enough time.
Oh, okay.
That wasn't the problem.
I had a binder like that too. That was all my outlines, and it was about that size. And then when I passed, I burned it.
I kept it
like
because
with a ceremony.
No, it was in my fireplace. I took all the papers out, and I went never again.
So your question is whether
I guess just what the contents of the binder is.
What the
That's top secret. I'm sorry.
I mean, I'll
classify information. Barbara gives you books, and then, you know, they have really long outlines, and then they have smaller outlines, and then you create your own outline from that. So it's like, basically, you take this big, giant thing, and then little by little, you figure it out, and then some people come up with that. I had, for each subject, I have, like, a thin little binder, so whenever I'm like, okay, I feel like doing contracts right now, I pull it out, and they would call it, and it was like, I had a one-pager where everything is in one page. And then there's a 10-pager, which was a little more detailed. And if there's anything that I needed further reference, then I go into the books. But, you know, it's part of taking a huge amount of volume and reducing it down.
These are all Barbara outlines. The handouts that you actually fill out during the lectures. So I was exaggerating a little when I said that I didn't go through all the videos. Go to the lectures, and you should see the videos, because that's what's going to help you make something like this. And this I reduced to the note card, which is what I like to use to study. And I also like to, I don't know if you guys do it, to just outline everything real quick on one sheet of paper. So
yeah, the one pager.
Yeah, I just had my one sheet of these are things that I find harder, or not one sheet, it ended up being a couple of pages, but these are things I find harder, or these are, you know, steps to things or causes of action that require these elements.
I mean, number one, Staples will love you because you'll go to Staples and buy all this stuff to help organize, to help you organize, but it's good. I mean, it's a good investment to, you know, if flashcards are your thing. I also use flashcards when I studied because I'm one of those people who has to do things by rote and just repeat things over and over and over to myself so in order to memorize it. Binders are great. I mean, there are going to be books that you'll get from your barbecue course that you'll never crack. And that's okay. They don't expect you to go through the thousands and thousands of pages of material that will come along with, you know, the thousands and thousands of dollars that you're going to spend on your barbecue course. You just can't. You don't have the time for that. But if you find a method that works for you in terms of whittling down what you learn from the lecture combined with what you read in the mini outlines combined with, you know, when you're writing these essays, going back to essay writing, you pick up these little nuances of law that you may never hear in a lecture and find some way to incorporate that into a smaller outline. That's a part of the whole process because things will start to come together. In the beginning, you're like, I'm just never going to be able to do this. It's crazy. But as you get to maybe 2 weeks out from the exam, you'll start to see concepts repeating. You'll see things coming together. And that's when I think you're really at the height of your learning. And so it's just really, organization is key. I mean, people who are just scatterbrained and have things all over the place, that may work for them, and that's great. I mean, I think most people can't operate that way. But organization is very, very important. And if you have a method where things are organized by subject or by colors or however you decide to do it, and you stick with that throughout the studying process, you'll find that your retention of information is going to be that much. It's going to be that much greater because you just have it organized in a fashion that you can go to it and pull the information immediately without having to run to 17 different books to figure out, you know, what the answer is. I'm going to quickly talk about DC reciprocity, and then we'll do final thoughts. And then it's 12 o'clock now, and then we'll officially end, but if you guys have time, just stick around for a couple minutes for question and answers. To answer your question from a long time ago about DC reciprocity, so as you know, 133 is written in red on the board. A couple things. If you score at least a 133 on the multi-state bar exam and you pass the bar exam in the jurisdiction that you sat for, and once you're admitted, you're eligible to waive into the District of Columbia. It is not a quick process. It is a long process. It's an annoying process. You do have to complete another character and fitness application, okay? But you should be able to transfer everything that you put on your first character and fitness application onto the DC one. You may have to do a couple of updates if you've moved or, you know, obviously employment, things like that. There's also a separate application that you complete online for DC. All of that goes, there are two application fees, one to fill out the DC application and then one to fill out the character and fitness application, which is the National Conference of Bar Examiners application. So in total, you're paying about $800 to waive into the District of Columbia. Once you submit everything, you get a conditional admission, which means that you don't have all rights of someone who's licensed to practice in DC, but you won't get that final approval until about 9-10 months out from application submission. So it is a very long process. It's not something that's going to happen overnight, so you just have to be patient. Remember, you have 5 years to do this. You don't have to do it immediately once you are admitted into whatever jurisdiction you sit for. So don't feel like you have to run out, you know, 5 minutes after getting sworn into Virginia and start the DC waiver process. From a financial standpoint, other standpoints, it may not be worth it at that point in time. If you don't need it, then, you know, don't do it. Wait a little while. But that's the process, okay? So let's do final thoughts. Carlos, I think, is taking a phone call outside. But Kirsten, Daniela, any words of wisdom, aside from what you've already told us, that you think people should know going into this process?
Stick to your schedule as best you can, try to stay as calm as you can, and try to find a friend who has been through it recently that you can vent to when you have your moments of panic that will come.
Yeah, I think that's right. Find the right support. And you know, this is stressful, and it's not natural for people to study the way that you study for the bar exam. And but once you acknowledge that it is something that you're doing and that it's not permanent, you'll get through it. And you got to stay focused, and you have to stay true to yourself, and you have to keep yourself accountable, but also cut yourself some slack because you've already accomplished so much. I mean, at this point, you've, you know, gone into law school and done well, graduated, and now you're taking the bar exam. So, I mean, you're at a privileged position. So congratulations. And then from there, you know, you have to move on. And it's hard. It's a hard process, but, you know, a lot of people have done it and they pass. I did, and I passed it. So there you go. It can happen.
Carlos, final words.
Final words?
Yep.
Okay.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's going to happen. So I wouldn't worry too much about the bar exam. You're guaranteed one of two results, and either of which will ruin your life. So.
And conclusion. That is not how I wanted it.
In all seriousness, you're fine. The fact that you showed up here means that you're diligent, that you're going to be on top of things. And as long as you make a reasonable effort to learn the material and you know, show up on the day of the exam, then you're going to be okay. Panic is the enemy.
That's a very good statement. I always tell students when I have conversations about this examination that, just like Danielle said, thousands before you have done it, thousands after you will do it. Actually, millions before you've done it. If you remain positive as much as you can, and trust me, it's very easy to be negative and cynical about the entire process. But if you tell yourself every day that you can do it and you can pass the exam, you'll be fine. Try to eliminate whatever negative attitude you have about the exam, because, as I said earlier, part of it is psychological, and the people who psych themselves out early are the people who fail the exam, because all they're focused on is how hard it is and how much work it is. And yeah, it's hard. Yeah, it's a lot of work. But you know what? It's at the end of the day, it's not difficult. Okay, it's not a difficult exam. It's just really an exercise in retention of information. And so, if there's you know, a sign you have to make for yourself, or something, some sort of symbol that you have to use to remind yourself that you can get through it, do that. As cheesy as it sounds, you know, some of the most minute things can be motivators. And so do that. Take time for yourself. Take time off. You know, it's okay to take a Saturday night off. It's okay to take a Sunday off. You know, anyone who tells you that you have to eat, sleep, and breathe the bar exam doesn't know what they're talking about. Okay? But you can get through it. All of us up here got through it. All of you can get through it. I hope to see all of your names on the passage lists when they come out in October and November. But you can do it. You've made it through 3 or 4 years of law school. As I said, this is just the final step. So thank you all. Thank you to our panelists. Please, again, give them a round of applause. If you have any questions, I have my, for those of you who don't know my contact information, I have my business cards up here if you want to take one to schedule a meeting to talk to me. I'm certainly more than welcome to, and happy to answer any questions that you have. Thank you for coming out again. There's more cookies in the back, so please take some. Sugar is good sometimes. And thanks, guys, and good luck with the rest of the semester. Good luck on your studying and the exam, and I will see you all around.